easy. All right, quarterback, we had finished him with Tony Hay. Last set quite a while ago. Tani Vav is Dover Kharif. I believe we already mentioned this concept last time, am I correct? In the context of what? Two contexts. Dover Kharif obviate two of the leniencies which we so like much like relying on. One of them is Eino Tani Vav. Tani Vav is Dover Kharif. I believe we already mentioned this concept last time, am I correct? In the context of what? Two contexts. Dover Kharif obviate two of the leniencies which we so like much like relying on. One of them is Eino Ben Yomo. Something which 24 hours pass, considered to be stale, bad tasting. Dava, Eino Ben Yomo. Dava Kharif. Oh, you got it. Yes. Dava Kharif obviates the leniency of Eino Ben Yomo. That means if something has been stagnant for 24 hours and absorbed in a utensil, you have the right to assume that it's stale and has no impact on food. However, if it's a Dover Kharif, the food is a Dover Kharif, it's a sharp food, it can have an impact even on the stale absorption of the pot and make it tasty, make it fresh. Number one. Number two, we spent quite a bit of time last time about not bar not. Remember that? Secondary taste. Permissible in certain circumstances, but if it's a Dava Kharif, then this leniency is once again suspect. So this all came up in previous simanim, which are not really about Dava Kharif as such. Sadi Dalit, Sadi Hey. This evening, we begin a new simon, a brand new simon called Sadi Bab, which is entitled Machal Kharif. Now the word Kharif is built to the title of the chapter we're discussing. There we are taught a person slices radish, very sharp vegetable, with a dairy knife or a meat knife. There is a major dispute whether it has an impact if the knife was Eino Ben Yomo, the knife hasn't been used in 24 hours. Some say no, some say yes. They're both opinions found in the Shulchan Aruch, written by Rav Yosef Karo. But, even according to the stricter view found in the Shulchan Aruch proper, the impact of the knife is limited what we call Kidei Netila, familiar term I hope. The size of the finger which surrounds the knife. So for example, if you have a very large, sharp vegetable, take an onion for example. We assume that onion is a sharp vegetable. You have a big onion, it's big, and you slice it with a meat knife. The question is this onion flacious? Based on what's called Dava Kharif, in tandem, in combination with what's called Duchko de Sakina, or in Hebrew, Dochak HaSake, the pressure of the knife. So the two opinions of the Shulchan Aruch about that. Some say no. We call Eino Ben Yomo, was used in less more than 24 hours ago. So then we have the right to be lean, it has no impact. Others say, as we mentioned earlier, a Dava Kharif, and even though it was stagnant for more than 24 hours, it's still a problem. Assuming it is a problem, how far does the problem reach? According to the Shulchan Aruch, it only reaches what's called Kedei Netila. But if you had a knife, slice a huge onion with it in a particular corner, all you have to use is fleshik, is the area within one finger's width of that knife cut. Beyond that, according to the Shulchan Aruch, no problem. Pressure of a knife.
What does that have to do with
the status of the knife? Pressure an onion with a knife, you assume that some of the tape absorbed in the knife will come out into the onion. Okay. However, there are more. We follow B'nai Ashkenaz. It says, no. The entire onion is prohibited. Or flesh is a little. In case maybe prohibited to drink the knife. Flesh is a flesh knife. It looks a little bit. No, why? What ingredient is missing over here?
The pressure.
Right, no pressure. So the Taz says, no problem. Whenever you can use the same, you can have only one horseradish container. The one horseradish container can be used for fleshings and for milligans. As long as for fleshings, use a fleshing spoon. For milligans, use a milligan spoon. And it's not a problem. So though there is double kharif, there's no duchka de sakina. This is the view of the Taz, and while there are those who disagree, and I've got the scripted position, we assume, or we may assume, the view of the Taz, that it's okay. Then you might have bought a mustard, right? Mustard is also a horror, right? Not out of disposal mustards, you know, not disposal, the dispenser mustard, you know. It used to be out to put this food in the olden days. So it would be okay for one of his tasks to use the same one mustard jar, eating hot dogs, put in the play sugar spoon when eating cheese, whatever. You put it in the spoon. As long as the spoons are clean, it's okay. Yes? Doha ha-sakin. Sakin is a knife, a doha is pressure. In Aramaic, it's took with the sakina, which is the same thing. Yes.
So it doesn't really make a difference in the case of a vegetable. Doesn't really make a difference if it's a cold utensil.
Ah, the question was raised. How can there be a problem? It's a little cold. We had a principle which we said was inviolate. That the only part of the problem of taste transferred if it's hot. Correct. With an exception. If you have a combination of a double chorif and doha kasakin, even though it's cold, it can still be taste transferred. It is an exception to the rule. Correct. Yes?
Why do you have to use a milk
spoon
in the milk? Does the
spoon
have any
protein? The spoon may even be a benyam. As long as there is no duchka de sakina, there's no pressure of a knife, there's no problem.
Okay, but you said before that if you're eating it for milk, you have to use a milk spoon. But like, let's say you take out
you're right, technically speaking, you're right. If you took a flesh of a spoon and spooned out mustard and put it on a paper plate, so you can use that as all the thing, you can use a milk spoon. I think I told you a story out in the house once about onions that was cut with a milligan knife and ended up as a chole. No? Relate to that. We spoke about it a long time ago. There was a conservation 60 times, but I won't go into that. I just want to refresh your memory about that story. The next thing is unbelievable. If the Shulchan Aruch were printed today, they'd probably say, he's a modern Orthodox rabbi, we should listen to him. Unbelievable. the non-Jewish people would bring sliced fish in a barrel, herring is his name, sure, and the Shulchan Aruch said it's look. How can I be? He cut it with a what?
A razor
knife. What's going on over here? So the Shulchan Aruch explains that even if the first one or two of the fish were cut with a non-kosher knife, after a couple of cuts, the taste of the knife becomes bottle, and therefore the prohibited pieces of fish are considered permissible because they're bottle mishishim, less than 1/16 of the sum total. And some are strict, but you should follow whatever custom you have. And if it's not sharp, there's even more grounds to be lenient. Why is all this relevant? Some of you may end up in professional capacities which are required to eat out at a non-kosher establishment. Now, of course, you should try to avoid it if at all possible. If you can, the question is always raised, can I go into this non-kosher eatery and order cut a half a cantaloupe? The question is about, but they cut it with a non-kosher knife, right? So the answer is, it's probably okay. Probably the knife is clean. And the Shulchan Aruch is telling us here, you will have a right to rely on the majority. In fact, if your piece of metal is clean. And therefore, although it's, once again, it's not something you recommend, there are plenty of kosher establishments these days, and I recommend them. But if you're stuck, this is what you rely upon. Yes?
Just because after you cut the first piece of fish, then the knife will be bottled, doesn't mean that if you happen to get the first
right,
fish.
Right, so what did you get? You are your unlucky person. The answer that way is throughout the Hilchos Tarugos, which we're going to start today, Mr. Shem. The Torah tells us, you would believe this, out of a piece of non-kosher meat, right here in the room, non-kosher meat. Then I go out of the room, I come back, somehow they got mixed up with two pieces of kosher meat. That means each and every piece is a 33% chance of being not kosher. And I thought I could say, great, reform. But then it's a total, what can I do? Achare Rabim Lahanas, follow the majority. Don't blame me. We'll get to that a little later, one of those details. We'll come to that. But you know how I'm going to. Can I tell a behind him story? Can I tell a behind him story? No. They had a kashrus convention some years back. So one of these, you know, smart alecks in the audience was trying to put down all the rabbis. You meet the Talmudic Rabbi Heinemann, that in your organization in Baltimore, Maryland, that you rely on Rove, that you rely on a majority, based on the system, it's just a majority, you're going to serve the public with food. Rabbi Heinemann asked this gentleman, my dear friend, do you eat cheese, milk, butter, and ice cream? Because, holy moly, it's raw. I never learned about that like next week. Holy moly, it's raw, yeah, of course. I don't understand, you can drink milk. Are you going to eat cheese or ice cream or butter? Why aren't you afraid that the cow from which the milk came for your particular product had a hole somewhere in it with a tray for it? The answer is, as I mentioned to you in the very beginning of this term, we have a right to rely on the majority, correct? And the majority of animals are not tray for. Aha! So my dear friend, you also rely on the majority. Yes, no way. But the fact that relying on the majority is a very important halacha. We do it all the time. And one who is holier than the Torah, who refuses to rely upon what we call Bitul B'Shishim or Bitul B'Rov, things of this nature, is labeled by the Marashal, Shlomo Luria, who lived in the 16th century, as being a possible heretic. He doesn't believe in the law of the Torah. The Torah that you rely on the majority, he's thrown in God. All in the rabbis, he doesn't believe in the Kabbalah and the Sar. So, did it a bit. Okay. Simon Sadi Dai. Not to eat Milovic bread is a real problem. Shabbat tells us basically tomorrow that Milovic bread is prohibited even with butter, even with nothing. They made a Zera not to eat Milovic bread because they're afraid that next thing you know, the first will eat it with pleasures. And the rabbis are so smart. There's so many cases we know of the people who either did it or came close to it. But they had eaten Milovic bread, which was under certain rabbinical supervision. The question can be, how can any rabbi cleanse his name to Milovic bread with the Shulchan Aruch and he cannot eat it? That's crazy. You know, put my name on pork? Oh, what's going on? It's strange. How can a rabbi put his name on it? But the answer is that some rabbis are of the opinion that if you designate that it's dairy, then it's okay. Well, the Gemara has such a case, one of two situations. Either the bread itself is shaped like a cow, everyone knows it's dairy, or it's a tiny, small amount of bread to be consumed in one sitting. But I'm afraid that it's going to be around and it mixed up the next meal, etc. I never saw bread looking like a cow. That's out. The question is, can you put it in a different kind of an indicator? So if there's a wrapper, I'll wrap the bread, and the mark will say, blank to blank, hesher, dairy. Big letters, dairy. So some rabbis are only opinion, hey, you made it, you made it like, looks like a cow. Put a picture of a cow in front. With a bottle of milk. Right up there, milk. So some people think it's alright. But most authorities say it's wrong. For a variety of reasons. One reason is, it's separable. A cow-shaped bread, so it's shaped like a cow. Whereas over here, it's true as a wrapper. You take it out of the wrapper, you put it on the table, and no one knows the wrapper's history. Moreover, that's why the wrapper is too little. To use the American expression, it's too little and too late. It's too late because the bread was already baked before the wrapper went on. So it already became trade. You cannot remove that stigma. According to most authorities, the whole concept of dairy bread is a no-no. It doesn't exist. Yes. Lane?
Assuming that a case in which there would be, let's say, a side of a muffin with a bread, assuming one's sitting, and it's wrapped with a picture of a cow on it, but it was already baked before it had to stop. Can I eat this bread?
So it depends which reason you said before, which was the acceptable reason to be strict. If reason A, then you would be allowed to. If reason B, you would not be allowed to. I wouldn't eat the bread. I wouldn't eat it in any circumstance. You use the word muffin. That's a tough word. But there are very respected, conscious organizations that give supervision to dairy muffins. And I don't like it. I didn't say anything. But I don't like it. I didn't say you, I said I. I don't like it. And the reason is that there are now... So presumably the reason for it is, look, it's not bread, it's a muffin. Everyone knows that muffins are all dairy, right? Wrong. There are many powerful muffins around. I can tell you case after case after case of English muffins with hamburger, salami, it works. People didn't realize it. It's like a roll, yes? No, I didn't say pastry. Only brisket is whole element. You know what grist means? You know the grist dynasty? They won't eat milk and cake either. Except cheesecake. I can't believe that. That's clear.
Cheesecake.
You know, milk and Danish. Raw sponge cake, they won't touch it. No, I only mean, in my opinion, the only thing which is a problem is something that you have usually together with a main dish. I'm saying, you make a sandwich with it, something of that nature. But I'm telling you that muffins are in that category, there's no doubt about it. You have toppings and sandwiches, it works. The only basis is that, well, everyone knows that all muffins are various. It's not true. They're the power of a muffin. Those are all right. But the trade ones are not just the middle of the ones. I wouldn't eat them. I'm not telling you shouldn't eat. I know everyone else thinks it's okay, but I'm one of those few who think it's not okay. What can I do? Yes? Nope. What about? Didn't we talk about that? When did it come up? Yeah, a long time ago. One of the first times we spoke about that. I thought that that's okay. Because in the old days, you had to put the cardboard box. Because people would assume it was dairy. But today, it is so common, these things, non-dairy food. It's so common. No longer that virus I ain't. That's the Shomanov speaks about. That's my opinion. Not a problem. All right, so this dairy bread is a big problem. I don't like it. I don't know. Some say, well, you can make a dairy muffin, but after all, a muffin is so small, it's consumed in one sitting. Very nice. How many muffins come in a pack? 12? 6? How big is your breakfast? I hope not big enough to consume. And aside from that, even if it would be, they make 1,000 of them in the factory, and then they divide them up in 60 or 60. I don't know, comparable to what the Gemara meant to make this one today, and
then
gone.
The amount you make makes a difference? I thought it was just the amount the person's eating in that sitting.
No, I think it should be the amount you make. That's what I think.
So
I don't think that a subsequent division of the bread to many purchases. Each one has a small amount of Kool-Aid. That's my view.
So one would be allowed to make a little thing of milk and bread. Just a little thing of milk and bread.
You can make a
glass
of milk and
bread. That's all right.
What about if they have new restaurants where they...
What restaurant?
I don't know. I think they
have
to figure out, they put garlic and butter on it or something like that.
No.
But if it's baked.
Are you allowed to butter your bread?
No, but if it's baked in the bread.
Baked with, really? Butter?
Mm-hmm. It's baked
after. In the bread? If bread is baked with the butter in? Kneaded? Is that baked with butter in?
I think it's melted on after.
Melted on afterwards?
Then that won't be okay.
Is it obvious that there's butter in it or not obvious?
Not
only. Everyone assumes. But if you have bread or butter, it's okay. You put it on rye bread, you put it on butter, everyone knows it's okay. No one said it's dairy bread, it's ridiculous. The question is why? Some say because it's obvious that the bristles will eat chicken. It's obvious. So you can have bread and butter because it's obvious. My personal opinion is that perhaps it's permissible because the expression which is found in the Gemara, a lushan isa b'chol. Should not knead the dough with milk or butter. Mm-hmm. And if it was kneaded prior, but the butter was put on afterwards, then I thought it would be permissible even if it's not obvious. They never made such a gzera. That's my view. Not others disagree with me. A lot of disputes over here. Yes?
There are a lot of breads down the market that are okay or OB dairy.
No.
And Arnold's white bread is dairy.
No. No, it's not true. If you look at the OU, does not give Ashkenaz to any dairy
then
bread.
Then it may be called K.
No, also not true. Triangle K.
No, it's
muffins.
Sliced white bread, and I'm
positive
because my mother's always like, be careful.
Do me a favor, bring me in the wrapper, we'll make a scandal right here. Man the phone.
I always find it.
No?
It's hard to find.
It's hard to find. qualifying fire breads, I'm talking about the bread of dairy, but they're not, you will not, as far as I know, there will be neither OU nor cupcake, to my knowledge. To my knowledge. That's to my knowledge. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, please let me know quickly. Yeah, many will say that muffin is nothing, it's obviously dairy. I don't think they realize that they're a power muffin. They're a power muffin to get a muffin. No? The same thing, OU parva, oh, you have parva and dairy, the same ashkocha. One is parva, one is dairy. How can they allow that? They're going to confuse one with the other. So, I mean, that's exactly what the rabbis are worried about. So I don't like, I'm personally an opponent of this particular practice. Well, what can I do? All right. With this, we have completed our love of first two questions. Yes? You work in a what store?
Whatever, in the store, if they need to, it's always in the cheese. Like it's only made to be served with cheese, so it's not. I have a problem with that too. I don't like that too much either, because the pizza, the pizza, the dairy became a problem before it was ever.
Unless it's something which is used exclusively for...
It's designated specifically.
I don't know if that's true, because they have these crusts, which are sometimes used for other things. Again, it all depends on the case. Sometimes it's used exclusively for dairy, then the rabbi, then the quaver. Like, maybe a muffin used to be that way, maybe. But I don't know, certainly now it's not that way. Now they have proper muffins. Yes, question two. Who else had a question?
What about like sorbet? Sherbet. Sherbet. I mean, sorbet. 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 S
I'm not in a position to make my own enactment on a little parva ice cream with no good because they may change it to dairy. I don't have that power. Or inclination for that matter. Yes? One of the most authorities, no. Because it's a no sharpness in the lettuce. Another problem I didn't discuss. What if I have a flaccid onion? Replace it. It was called a flaccid onion, right? And I cut that flaccid onion now with a parma knife. And I take that parma and I cut another onion. Is that onion flavor? How far does it go? Follow me? The knife was parma originally. The knife was used to cut a flaccid onion. Does that become flaccid now? So it cuts a plain onion, it becomes a good flaccid? A big dispute among the Poskim. I'm not going to go into every detail. There's so much to talk about here.
Well, what if you cut an onion with a fleshig knife and then cut those slices with a milchuk knife?
Same problem. Worst problem. I cut an onion with a fleshig knife and I cut the same one with a milchuk knife. Could be onion straight. We got absorption of meat and absorption of milk. Right. The knife may also be trained. So here's a whole chapter here, chapter 12. Called Kashrus of a Knife. Very big, many problems here. Many problems. Yes? Butter. The onions are in the bread? Or on top of the bread and put it later? Like an onion roll? Well, in an onion roll, you don't need the dough with onions. You need the dough to make a regular roll and you throw it on top.
No.
I think it might be okay. All right. Okay. We have discussed just about all the general topics which are of concern relating to basar bechala, meat and milk. It's a very major topic. The next halacha, Tariches, begins is called Tarubis. Tarubis, which has spanned again many important matters, is, how should I say, it's more fundamental in a certain way, but less practical. Yes? Very good, very good. Poskim say that once the onion is cooked, it loses its sharpness. And from that point on, no longer this rule of Dava Chara. Thank you. I forgot to mention that. Very good. Okay. So we're now beginning the Lord of Tarubis, which spans Simon Tzadi Ches, Kushir Aleph. We're not going to discuss every letter. We failed at so many. We're trying to cover the highlights. The first topic is what's called Tam Ki'ikar, which has been an assumption. All of the Parshim ask, why did the Shavanar put Basa Bakala before Harubis? Should we know the way around? Harubis could be the underpinnings, but that's just the way it is. Tam Ki'ikar is simply a rule that there's an infusion of taste from non-kosher into kosher, or from dairy into meat, or vice versa. Then it creates a halakhic problem. Usually we assume that the ratio required to obviate taste is 60 to 1. The Shulchan Aruch actually relies upon a cook, professional taster, or maybe even just a plain person who's knows what he's doing, to determine for you, is there a taste of dairy or not. The Ramah Ashkenaz says we don't rely on any non-Jewish tasters. Why not? Perhaps we're afraid we're not getting the truth. But the assumption is that we do rely on a Jewish taster, even if he's not a professional. I'll just disagree and say he won't taste it. This happened in my famous shout out. I told about the hot dogs. Remember the hot dog shout out?
Yeah.
With the milchic pot? No? Has that been story?
Yeah.
So I may have mentioned to you at the time that some people had finished eating, some in the middle of eating, and some hadn't started eating. We discovered that the hot dogs are cooked in a dairy pot. One of the reasons to be permissive in this ruling was that, and one of my sons told me this, Abba, what's the problem? I tasted the hot dog. There's no doubt I don't taste any dairy. And I'm Jewish, I have credibility. I have to trust my, there's nothing in there. So that was one of the things, one of the bases of our lenient ruling was that there was not a non-Jewish, but a Jewish person who had tasted and not found any dairy taste whatsoever. I'm just saying, look, well, you know, the yeshiva boy, what does he know about taste? That would be more in the field. The halacha is that you require 60 times to nullify something whenever it gets mixed in. Just for your information, by Torah law, you need 60 times if it's what's called Eino Mino, a different type, to have meat in milk or meat in potatoes. Whereas what we call min benito, they both are the same type, and by Torah law, we generally assume, would be again, the majority would rule that a mixture of 51% kosher and 49% non-kosher, all mixed together at the same time, by Torah law, you need the whole thing. Rabbinically, it requires 60. They're afraid you're going to confuse one with the other. Of course, it goes without saying that the only time the principle of Bittul Berov applies, cancellation and nullification, in its greater amount, but for us 60 times its amount, is only if the original prohibited food is not discernible. That all makes sense. It's but you can pick it out, you're required to do so. You can, I see a piece of pork that makes sense to my beans. I can probably have pork and beans because the pork is less than 1 in 60. That's ridiculous to go in there and pull the pork out.
The blood that's inside bones? We're not worried about that? About you?
No. Yes.
Non-kosher
bones. Okay. Now a very important thing. It's called Ein Mevatlin Issa L'Chatchila. Yeah, I'll put it on this. Let's say you picked up a real great tip in this class. If I have kosher, non-kosher food, and it's only 1% of the sum total, and it's not discernible, you can't see it, that's our whole total is mutter. Great. I'm going to make a quick buck. I will one out of my competition. I'll take my kosher product. I'll pour in 1% non-kosher, right? Which my competitor throws out. I'll pour it into the 100. I know, the rabbi told me, call it bundle of the shishim. There's a bundle of the mayor, nothing, no problem. And I have a 1% margin on it. Makes a few dollars. No, you may not do that. Aim the vatlin isalachatil. We discussed this once before. You're not permitted to literally nullify prohibited foods lechatchila in the first instance. Okay, you can't nullify. Not only that, if you did it, you nullified it purposefully, knowing that you're not supposed to do it anyway, it is prohibited to that person who went against the halacha, as well as to any other person on behalf of whom it was nullified. So someone, we assume someone is a wholesaler, and he wants to add a 1% to his whole stock, so he throws in the non-kosher product. Look, it's only 1%. So we assume it's prohibited for him, for the person who did the pull off the stunt, as well as for all of his customers. Because the post can say over here, all of his customers are considered in the category of what's called the Misha, the Bashal Bishvila, when we did it. And even if he didn't even know about it, it's fine, still. Other people can eat it. Fine. There are many other intricacies here concerning the practice of Chatchila. I'm not going to go into it. Just remember, you're not supposed to do it. In this topic, the Shavuot Aruch calls them a sum of a digression, which could be relevant. That day, something was put in 1%. Fell in by mistake, 1%. And now, guess what happened? You're not going to believe it. Another 1% fell in. 1 plus 1 is more than 1 essentially. What happens now? You have a question? I threw in 1%. At that point, I can eat the whole thing. Then I throw in another 1%. Oh, another 1% falls in by mistake. Not 2%. No longer but for Mishish. Do we say that it now becomes prohibited all over again or not? The Ramah accepts the strict view. It's called Chozer V'Niyur. That amount of 1% that fell in the first time, it was considered dormant to sleep, it was bundled in Bimea, wakes up again to join forces with the second spill.
Rama.
And everyone agrees, there's so many details, but that's the Rama which we usually concern.
What's the book?
Chozer V'Niyur. Can I write a book? Sleeping, it was one, it was considered null and void, and woke up again. Yes?
In that, you're talking about if someone is making
a
kosher and puts in
non-kosher,
and
kosher
puts in
the
quantity.
In order to increase the quantity.
Right, so what if someone by accident puts in non-kosher, and it's not a kosher, and then he adds more kosher, but it accidentally...
Yeah, that's also number. We put it... I would say you can try to be with the naked butter. You get it, it's also. It's gonna happen stuff. It's gonna happen. Okay. Now, the number of other halakhas we'll go through quickly. One is called beria. Beria means a creature, a live, or a full creature. A full creature is not, has no bitter. You cannot make it what we call butter. And it's disregarded like this. There's a difference in certain vegetable products between the possibility of live bugs or not. We already discussed the bug issue before. I'll go into it again. Kurbeis, it's called Domer Sheyesh Lo Matirin. It's making a quick glossary over here. Domer Sheyesh Lo Matirin. Matirin literally means forces which make it permissible. The most common force is time. There can be others as well. Domer Sheyesh Lo Matirin, it's the Gemara tells us, the Shabbatar calls it, Afilu Bela Flo Bottle. It's not bottle. Usually think of the bottle of a shishim. It says null 1 and 60. This is called Yesh Lo Matirin. Wait for tomorrow. Why take a chance? Wait for tomorrow. Because we don't rely on Bittul as a rule. Sure, I'll say this. I give an example that Shavanaro gives. Based on the very famous Gemara. I have an egg. The egg was a yontif dig egg. First Mishnah in the Sechta Beitza. Beitza should know the yontif. Born on yontif. Okay, so it's mukta. You can't touch it. Mukta is along the Shabbat, along the yontif. It's called Yesh Lo Matirin. You have to wait a little bit. It's not permissible. We don't take chance. We don't rely upon bitul or suffix or things of this nature. It's a real problem. How do you define this? Let's say you have a fork. You have a whole bunch of kosher forks in your kitchen, and one of your forks became ready. it all happened. You put it aside. And your little kid comes along and fixes it to everything else all over again. Now what do you do? So you have one non-kosher pork mixed in with 20 other kosher ones. What do you do? So some say, gotta kosher all of them. Because yesh lo matir. You can obviate the problem very easily by just kashering all of them. Others say no. Yesh lo matir means it's know what happens. You put it aside. And your little kid comes along and fixes it everything else all over again. Now what do you do? So you have one non-kosher pork mixed in with 20 other kosher ones. What do you do? So some say, gotta kosher all of them. Because yesh lo matir. You can obviate the problem very easily by just kashering all of them. Others say no. Yesh lo matir means it happened by itself. Without a great deal of effort expended. Here, or kasher 20 forks. Not so simple. Some say just use them all as is. Some say.
All the pieces.
The basis is that you can't say yesh lo matir. We'll wait till tonight and we'll all become mutter. They're never going to become mutter. The only way to make them all mutter for sure is to kasher all of them. That's a lot. That's too much of a difficulty. You can't expect the person to do should they. Just label the yesh lo matir.
If it's trace, it's trace.
Don't believe me. I'm reading the Shulchan Aruch verbatim. I see I ran into a big problem. I don't always believe me. Kli shenesar v'blias iser. It's a simon kuf beis of gimel. Utensil which became absorb something non-kosher. Shenesare v'acherim, which was mixed up with others. Vein on nikar, and it's not recognizable which. Bottle barov. Simple, isn't it? One of them was just a simple majority knocks it out. They don't know so kedama sheish to matirim, and we don't consider the yesh to matirim. Why? Should tzara pahotzi ala hotzo, it's like ilo. It costs money to kasha, money and hassle and pain. You just kasha like this, like this. You have to lay the laws of kasha, you just, you know, snap your fingers and become stoshin. Others disagree. Yes, of course.
I'm just not understanding, because if it's treif, you know, okay, so it's a tirchad kasher, but you know, you got a kasher, the thing is treif.
If it's treif, a kasher, maybe it's kosher, probably kosher.
How are you saying that it's kosher? I don't understand.
Each and every fork you pick up is probably kosher. We have mixed in with 10 other ones. One was not kosher, 10 were kosher. Every pick up a fork is probably kosher.
Okay.
We're allowed to throw around the majority. Okay. Kuf Gimel, again, everything is sort of a brief snippet here. Kuf Gimel is called no same time that gum. Negative taste. Something which gives negative taste, you have a right to disregard that taste. Those kind of gamas mutter. Those are all the cases of pot which haven't been used in 24 hours. That's called nose of time of gam. But there can also be certain food mixtures which are of gam. I put food A into food B. A may be good, B may be good. But A into B, A makes B taste terrible. A is not the way it would be.
So, for example, if you were to, by accident, drop some corned beef into the ice cream, if you remove the corned beef, the ice cream is still mutter?
But the corn,
even if it tastes horrible,
if the corned beef tastes into ice cream, makes ice cream taste worse than it would otherwise, then it would be mutter. I mean, an if-then statement, because I don't know
if it tastes bad,
if it's a net negative, and a net negative impact on the taste of the food into which it exists.
Well, yeah, you know, it has to try it.
Well, you way happened to happen once before, and you went and you realized that afterwards, you found out it was a negative impact.
Doesn't matter how much taste
it is. It can't be a majority of the product of the show. It's about the world. Okay. any questions you want. I don't want.
Is a live creature falling in? It's a full creature. It has no vessel. What's an example?
A cat.
Did you take the creature out?
And you're fine. And you're all right.
Then it gets mixed in.
It gets mixed in. And there's no bugs. There's bugs in the lettuce. And there's no bugs in the lettuce. Most posts can assume, by the way, that these bugs have a negative taste impact. So if you cook the product and there was bugs in there, you removed all the bugs, so let's say one of the bugs on the shishim for some crazy reason, then it still would be permitted to eat the rest of the food if you sell the daya, the stomach for it, based on the ground and also the top of the ground, a negative, net negative impact. They had a case here about that. They found a mouse in the wine of the beer. It actually happened. In the old days, there were many more critters running around the kitchen. Yes?
How do you judge the bug wasn't limited
to that kind of taste?
If you're going to eat it anyway, how bad is it
going to taste? You can't eat it if it tastes. On a net positive, it tastes, you can't eat it.
No, but if you say that it doesn't taste that great,
but you know, just hang on with the vents. Last time something of this nature happened.
I'm saying if you're
going
to eat it, obviously
it's
not so bad.
Why is this great food? If somebody picks something and that tastes good, but that great to good, I'll still eat it, but the net negative is the net taste is a negative. Okay. I believe I already mentioned briefly, but let's go starting. Simon Kufay, a very important Simon. Kufay tells us a concept called Kovash Kimarushal. Do you have that yet? Maybe not. If something soaks in water 24 hours, you look at the assumption that it's able to transfer taste. Kovash Kimarushal. Something soaked for 24 hours. Same liquid medium, we assume it's as if it's cooked in that medium. So it's cold. Yes?
What's the reason for that doesn't have to come in? Because if you're going to eat it anyway, even if it's going to make the taste worse, why?
Look, you're eating kosher food, basically. The majority is kosher. Some negative food got mixed in, right? It has negative impact on this on the kosher food. So why should the kosher food be non-kosher? It wasn't made any better by the non-kosher food.
So I personally don't like cheeseburger, but I want a hamburger. I can eat the cheeseburger.
No. It's only in the case where you're eating completely kosher food. Only if the kosher food received a negative taste infusion from non-kosher food. No. Not like a cheeseburger eating the thing together. There's no comparison to that.
No,
I'm just saying
the idea
of if it doesn't
taste
good,
it's
still
wonderful. Why does it change the nature of
that possible cause? If it doesn't have a positive impact, then we don't apply the principle of possible cause. Not. You need the time, also the time, what's called the shvach, to make it good, not just God, make it bad. There's a principle of kavosh, of mix of soaking, if you will, for 24 hours, causes all kinds of problems. Let's say I'll give you the simplest problem. I, by mistake, soak non-kosher food in a pot full of water for 24 hours. Guess what? The pot can become treif. If there was kosher food, the water becomes straight. If it was kosher food in that same water, it becomes straight. The pot can become straight too. Could even be cold water. Yes? We assume that less than 24 hours is nothing. And I would agree, that's our general assumption. 24 hours is the cutoff. That's not a problem, more than that is a problem. It's interesting, a very interesting dispute. If I have, let's say, for example, non-kosher food in a kosher cup for more than 24 hours, does it create a problem or not? Some say, I gotta cause a problem. I'll put, let's say, next time I'll put some kosher food in it. Oh, it's gonna be terrible. I'll put the kosher food in it, and the kosher will become trey. Because that one which is in the pot will come out and render the kosher food trey. Toss it, it's an impossibility. Why? Because it won't come out in less than 24 hours, correct? And get out by 24 hours. By the time 24 hours pass, the pot is a nosen tam of God. But it's kin about teeth to the tam, we make it. I repeat, according to the tam, it's impossible for a pot, it's not kosher, to make kosher food which is soaking in it. Non-kosher through the principle of kosher. Why? Because the pot won't start doing its thing until 24 hours pass. And the moment that happens, the pot's considered having a negative taste impact. So we never get off the ground. So it works in the other direction. Food and the pot can render the pot tray for 24 hours. But the pot can't render any of the food tray.
Because
all that eats. Different story. Okay. The next part talks that we discussed already. Yes, I'm sorry. We assume that if a cup is to work, you have to wait 24 hours. The science beats me too. But that's to be some time. So we assume it's 24 hours. That's what we assume. It's rather, some a little bit, not so simple, that's our assumption. We discussed it before, remember Tata, Gavar, Ilo, I had an idea right on the board, huh?
Yeah.
Tata, Ilo, he rise, that's found over here in the next sip of Shulchan Aruch. Before that, we also discussed it. What about a klisheni we had? Remember that? Did the klisheni cause taste to come or not? So Shulchan Aruch has two views on that also. And the Shulchan Aruch thinks we should be strict, and the Rambam writes we can be lenient. Even the Shulchan Aruch writes we're stuck, he can be lenient. So these things are all found over here in Kufay, which will be towards the end of the Laws of Tarus. Two hot foods touch each other. One's kosher, one's trey, and they're all dry, hot and dry. So the Shulchan Aruch says that the maximum impact of the trey to the kosher is the size of a finger. I think I may have mentioned this before at all. Unless it's called a davar shomei, it's fatty. If it's fatty, it can go whoop. It can go and impart taste throughout. And there are more, this world famous stringency, that we're not experts. We're not expert in anything. Right, with what's fatty, what's not fatty, so therefore we can, we have to be strict and say, well, maybe it's fatty. and therefore we have to prohibit the whole piece of kosher food. In other words, it's non-kosher, if it's kosher, maybe it's fatty, throw the whole thing out. The poskim say if it's bread, which is obviously not fat, something which is, you know, so lean, then much less, we don't have to be so strict. Fatty foods have a greater capacity to transmit their taste to other foods. Ask your local dietitian or nutritionist or chemist. Yes?
Vegetables
also probably can't be fat. Vegetables are fat. Salted together, again no weakness, just salted together, it constitutes a halakhic problem. Salt can cause a transfer of taste. Prohibited one is unsalty. The permissible one is salty, so there's not much of a problem.
If they're both salty, that's
for this reason, the expression called Ein Melicha B'Kelim. I mean Ein Melicha B'Kelim. Salt will not take food out of its absorptive state in a pot or dish, etc. The reason is that the problem, which is the plate or the pot itself, is not salty. You want to take the substance out of it by quote unquote salting the pot. You can't do it. End with this, be careful. For that reason, if you don't have too many trailer pots around the house, and then show it up, hide it, okay. Cheese that someone made in a utensil of a goy, the animal needs the kalin, because nothing's going to come out. Cold, of course. Similarly, if you put salt in a plashing cup, you can then take the salt out and put it to middle. Now you should be aware of the fact that salt is a very powerful taste agent. Whoa, salt, you know, the loyalty now it is. A pinch of salt, that's expression. A little pinch will be able to impact on the whole pot or pan or cup, fish. Pinch of salt. What'll happen if you throw a pinch of salt into big pot, and the pinch of salt was drank salt, the one. Well, the salt had absorbed blood. You threw the pinch of salt into the dish of meat or fish, whatever it may be, potatoes, and the content of the dish of more than 60 times the salt. But the salt is tasteable anyway. Usually 60 is just an approximation of how far the taste goes. Even though the taste goes even beyond 60. So Benarov said it's mutter anyway. Even though you taste the salt. You know why? Because the salt is not intrinsically non-kosher. What's not kosher? blood. The blood is Batal Mishishim. Squeezed out, diffused over the entire pot. It's assuming it's a solid. If it's liquid, we assume it gets diffused over everything. The fly fell into the soup. Case of the shulchan. Not a problem. I mean, I wouldn't eat the fly, but the soup is okay if you want, because it's no same time with God. It's a negative taste to the soup. Kufkes talks about cooking or baking kosher meat and trefa meat in the same oven at the same time. There could be cases in which it's technically speaking permissible, but I would never, never do such a thing ideally. You never go with the problems you could potentially have. One after the other, kosher and trade, but dairy and meat we've already discussed before, the problem would be all what? In other words? Zeah, the steam. I'm not going to repeat that discussion. Here's a nice case. Now you might think it's still some water. You wouldn't believe it if it wasn't Shekharah. But actually they had it. It's already in Tosis. We know that Kli She'ein of Yomo, the utensil wasn't used 24 hours, so will not render any food tray. Does that mean I can take my tray utensil, which was dormant for 24 hours of use now? No way. I don't do the Chathilo in the Yemen. Both factors was done, and the food is permissible. Here's the following challenge. In the old days, there were no Jewish bakeries. It was a Gershon bakery. And the guy wouldn't let the Jew use his own, like they have what they call them, these pizza shovels. You ever see the things today? What's the word? Shovel? Paddle. The paddle, they took it to the oven, and they take the food out, the bread out. They wouldn't let the Jew use his own. It'd be crazy. They insist on using the Goyish pattern. And they bake bread for the Jews. You know, I don't know, certain days of the week we make bread for the Jews. But the paddle is used for non-kosher bread. Says the Shulchan Aruch, if we know that 24 hours elapsed between the time that the non-Jew used the paddle, the time that it was used to bake the kosher bread, it's alright. You let it go in there and buy the bread. Why? What happens to the principle of, you know, I feel that you shouldn't use a 24-hour old clip. The answer is, it's not a chasfil. There's no alternative. There's no choice. Otherwise, you can't eat bread in town. So those who ask for Moshe Feinstein to go to the Rocha, can you give a supervision, partial supervision to a non-Jewish company in a case in which you know for a fact that they use the same utensils for non-kosher, but they'll let 24 hours pass before using it for kosher. So strictly speaking, it's okay, right? Right? Okay? Mr. Rabbi Shirai, you're right, it's okay. But it would be considered ugly, mechur, for a proper authorizing agency or rabbi to give it supervision. Because, although even strictly speaking, it's alright, because at the time they use the non-kosher pot, was cleaned and 24 hours passed, nah, not a nice thing to do. So we don't do it.
Okay, basically speaking, they insist that it be kasher in between. We haven't got to go to kasher yet, but whatever that laws are, we insist on it. Because then the Rav Moshe said it's not right. The difference will be that, as we shall see, I guess by probably next week by now, there are many disputes concerning kosher kashering. Because you use this and this and this. There's a whole book on it. The book called Only Chol Yisrael. Why? A tracheal question. There's a hole in the stomach. It's a major issue which the poskim talk about. And some of the considerations about if you're in doubt, you don't know, you're not considered, comes up in this whole issue over here. It's a suffix, we're not sure if it's a trefah, and it's only a rabbinical question, so maybe it's a sake of the Rabbana Lakula, but maybe it started off as a Torah suffix, and even though now it's sort of this galgil, it became a rabbinical suffix, it's too late, you can't, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a flavor of how complicated things can get. And I think that we're going to end with this flavor, because there's so much more in this book. If I have any questions, why dismiss the class and ask some questions? Yes. So that's a question. What's the next? Of the cash flow, the monetary